Welcome to Queries, Qualms, and Quirks, the twice-a-month podcast that asks published authors to share their successful query letter and discuss their journey from first spark to day of publication. I am your host, author Sarah Nicholas, and literary agent Sarah N. Fisk. Jennifer Chen is a freelance journalist who has written for Oprah Daily, Real Simple, and Today. Her debut YA rom-com book, Artifacts of an Ex, is out now. So please welcome Jennifer to the show. Hello.
Hi, Sarah.
So we are going to talk about your journey to publication, and we're going to start by going all the way back to the beginning. When did you first start getting interested in writing, and then how long did it take from then before you started getting serious about pursuing publication?
Gosh, I went to a performing arts public high school in New Jersey, and so I majored in creative writing, which meant that two periods a day I got to write creatively, and it was the thing I loved the most in high school and made me really appreciate my high school because I hung out with other writers, other weirdos like me who liked reading. And that's when I was like, okay, I want to go to college for writing. And it just set me on a path to continue doing it. So I went to NYU's Tisch School of the Arts for dramatic writing, which is playwriting, screenwriting, and TV writing.
Oh, wow. All right.
Yeah.
So how did you learn more about the publishing industry, like how to query, how it works, how to go about it, stuff like that?
I took a short story fiction class in NYU, ended up writing a short story there that I turned into a YA novel. And then, this is a long time ago, but Random House Delacorte used to have a young adult novel contest. So I submit unsolicited manuscripts, which I did. I got an editor who asked for revisions. I was 22 or 23 at the time. So in that brain, I was like, I need to turn around these edits as fast as possible. She said, take a few months. Here's my edit letter, like a physical, actual letter that she sent me in the mail. That's how long ago this was. I did my revisions in 2 weeks, which I would not advise to anyone.
Wow.
And she passed on it. She said, you know, this isn't quite ready. And she was right. It wasn't ready. But I had gone to NYU with someone who ended up becoming a literary agent, and she asked to read it. And she and I started working together. I can't honestly remember, 2004 maybe. But I was really green and new to publishing, and I didn't know much about it. They also think, well, YA was different than it is now. So that's where I started.
So then what happened? Can you break down your journey from then to signing your first book contract?
Sure. So I made an Instagram post about this because when it was sort of trendy to write about your writing journey and how many books didn't sell, I wanted to go back and like look at my actual timeline. And so I signed with my first agent. I went back and like looked at my emails and letters. I signed with my first agent April 2009. In September 2020, we went on sub with a YA contemporary that did not sell.
2010. Okay.
And we did one round of 12 editors. November 2013, I had a middle grade book series idea that we subbed to 8 editors. None of them bought it. In May 2015, this year wrote a YA contemporary draft of a book that I didn't finish, because my agent ended up liking a different book that I had pitched her. I also, in June 2015, wrote a nonfiction book proposal about miscarriages that did not sell. And then also in June 2015, my first agent decided to leave agenting completely and become a high school English teacher. And then literally the next month, I found out I was pregnant with twins. And so it was one of those moments where I'm like, oh, I've got to redo everything. I have to find a new agent. I have to write a new book. I queried agents. I queried agents in November 2015 while I was pregnant, thinking like, I'll just find an agent while I'm pregnant. And then these are not advisable things to do, but this is what I did because I was so eager to sign with someone new. I queried, I got all rejections November 2015. And I think in total, maybe 12 rejections. All kind of in the same week or two. And I remember calling my friend and saying, well, that's it. I'm done. Like, I'm done trying. And she was like, Jen, all of these agents gave you feedback on your book. Almost every single one wrote me, not a form rejection letter, but actual feedback. And she's like, if you could take a month or two off and then actually look at the feedback and see if any of it makes sense to you and revise using their feedback. She's like, agents are going to give you feedback to be nice. Like, use it. And she was right. I just took some time off. And then I took about a year and a half to revise that manuscript. And then I started querying agents again. October 2019, I queried. This time around, I really, like, I had multiple people read my query letter. I really kept it to three paragraphs. I edited every word that did not need it to be there. It was like the tightest three paragraph query letter I've ever written. And that's when I got a lot of full manuscript requests. From there, when DV Pitt still existed, I had tweeted out about my book. I had one agent who wanted to read the full manuscript and wanted to set up a call. So we did. And then she offered me representation on the phone. I said, you know, I need some time to think about it. I went back to everybody else. Quite a few people were like, okay, great. I'm going to read the full, or I don't have time right now. So thank you. Good luck. One of those happens to be my current agent. She, Katie Flum, she set up a call with me. And so I had two calls sort of back to back with two different agents. And that helped me narrow it down to Katie, because she had really great notes. She had a really great plan for the book. And then I signed with her in December 2019. And we were going to sub the book in January, February 2020. it was a dark contemporary YA that has a school shooting. It's a serious book. We had thought, okay, like, I'll take a month or two to revise based on Katie's notes. We'll sub. And then the pandemic happened. Katie said to me, okay, let's just hold it for a month or two. Let's just see, like, maybe the pandemic will be over in April. Like, we didn't know. We had no clue. And so we held it for a few months and then decided to sub it June 2020, which if I had a crystal ball, I would have said, no, let's not do it at all. Every editor was like, Jen seems like a great writer. This query is great. I don't want to read this. I just don't want to read anything dark right now. I don't want to read anything heavy. I don't have the bandwidth. And I totally understood. I mean, I didn't want to read anything dark or heavy either. So it didn't sell. And in the meantime, I was writing a lot of journalism. I'm a journalist by day. And so I was writing a lot about anti-Asian hate to the point where it felt like that's all I was reporting on. And it was starting to get to me. It was starting to feel like that's all the world is like all these graphic, awful, violent attacks. And so I wrote Artifacts Next in about 3 months as I was starting to read more romance. I was starting to read stuff that felt good and fun. And I was like, okay, I really like this genre. I want to write something fun. Like, the world is crazy and awful, and all I'm seeing is awfulness. So I wrote Artifacts in 3 months, and that's the fastest I've ever written a manuscript, because it was fun. It was really fun to write. It was an idea I had, and it sold in 2 weeks. So the other manuscript that Katie and I had originally sent out, we did two rounds of sending it on submission. It didn't go anywhere. Literally, like, months of just, I think we did second round in October, and it just didn't go anywhere. And so I said to Katie, well, I have this other book, and it's almost done, and it's very different. And she was like, okay, great. And then when she read it, she's like, I love this. And she gave me notes. And then we went on submission, an exclusive submission with a small an imprint that I really wanted to publish with. They passed on it. And then we went widely. And that's when I got my current editor. Yeah. So it was a lot of rejection before selling.
Awesome. Okay. It is time for the first cue of the podcast. Can you read your query letter for us?
Sure. So this is the book that I landed with my agent, but didn't actually sell. Here we go. Pretty Ugly, 87,000 Words is a YA own voices contemporary novel in the style of Dumplin' by Julie Murphy meets The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas. Michelle Endelman at the Regal Hoffman and Associates was my agent until she left the business. I am on the hunt for a new agent, and I'd love to be considered for representation with your agency. Full disclosure, a few agents requested the full manuscript. All Claire Gow's ever wanted is to become an actress. But when Claire turns down Quiet Loner, Larry Ng's invitation to Shrewsbury High spring fling. He reacts the next day with violence. Larry shoots 16-year-old Claire point blank in the face. He murders his school bullies, a beloved history teacher, and injures Duck, Claire's best friend and secret crush. 25 hours of reconstructive surgery later, Claire is alive but disfigured. Devastated by her tragedy, the former extrovert retreats further into the safety of her bedroom, feeling hideous, unlovable, and terrified. During a late-night internet search for plastic surgery, Claire discovers a way to fix her problem, a face transplant. Meanwhile, Doug and her friends mount a Shrewsbury Survivor's Gun Control Movement, an anonymous group calling themselves Larry's Legion, troll and harass the activists with violence, including Claire. As she desperately tries to move on, Claire must decide whether to stay in the shadows of her tragedy or step into the spotlight. I'm a freelance journalist who has written for print and online, including pieces in Oh, the Oprah Magazine, Real Simple, Bust, and BuzzFeed. I have an MFA and BFA in dramatic writing from New York University's Tisch School of the Arts, and I'm a proud alumni of Hedgebrook, a women's writing residency. I live in Los Angeles with my TV writer husband, 3-year-old twin daughters, and a snorty pug named Chewbacca.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing.
Yes.
How has your experience been since signing that first contract? Especially let us know if anything surprised you along the way.
You know, I think the thing that surprised me the most was kind of realizing how much I had to think about it myself. Like, I have a traditional publisher, so there's a marketing team, there's a publicist. But a lot of the ideas and the events that I'm doing came from ideas of my own and just asking, hey, can I have some help with this? So I think I had thought originally that like book events were all planned by your publisher and that, you know, you just show up. And when it came time for that, I realized like, oh, I'm going to do my own like work inside of book things and then kind of, you know, ask them questions and ask for help, but really kind of do the legwork on it. So that's something I did not know.
All right. It is time for the quick round. I call it author DNA. Are you a pantser or a plotter?
Plotter.
Do you tend to be an overwriter or an underwriter?
Underwriter.
Do you prefer to write in the morning or at night?
In the afternoon.
When you start with a new project, do you typically start with a character or a plot or a concept or something else?
Concept.
Do you prefer coffee or tea?
Cappuccino.
Whenever you're writing, do you prefer silence or some kind of sound?
Sound.
When it comes to the first draft, are you a get it down kind of person or a get it right kind of person?
Get it down.
What tools or software do you use to draft?
Scrivener.
Do you prefer drafting or revising more?
Revising.
Do you write in sequential order or do you hop around?
Sequential order.
And final quick round question, are you an extrovert or an introvert?
Introvert.
All right. We're going to talk about the second cue now. What were some of the qualms or worries that you had on your journey? Do you feel like they were realized or you overcame them or, you know, how did they shake out?
Something that I had to worry about with when I signed the 2-book deal was, you know, I had this idea for the second book and it seems silly now, but I remember talking to my agent and I said, you know, I think my second book, I think I'm still going to have characters of color. Is that okay? And she's like, Jen, you don't need to think about that. Like, do you think any other white writers consider that they have white characters? And she really helped me. I thought I was like, oh, everybody's just going to think that I just write Asian characters. And she's like, well, that's what you want. And I said, yeah. So she's like, it's totally okay. And that really helped me kind of step out of like, oh, I can just write whatever I want. And I think because I had come into YA book publishing years ago, it was very different. It was very, very different landscape. There weren't a lot of Asian protagonists on covers in books. There weren't a lot of lead stories like that. So I think I was my qualm and worry was coming from 10 years ago, Jen.
Yeah. All right. Now it's time for the third cue. Do you have any writing quirks? Is there anything about your writing process that you think is kind of different or interesting or unique?
I'm super organized. And so I actually leaned into that for writing. So something that I share is that book that you heard my query letter from. It took me about 3 years of writing and revising before I got an agent with that. I wrote Artifacts in 3 months. It's a huge difference. And I completely changed my process and I got more organized and focused. I took fiction writing classes.
I read a book that I recommend all the time, Story Genius by Lisa Kron. It really helped me to outline better. And so I really kind of revamped my old pantser philosophy. And in the time that I had kids, was like, I don't have time to spend 3 years on one book. Like, I want to do this faster. So I took classes, I read books, I listened to other authors who I admire, but also write prolifically. And I was like, what are they doing? How are they doing it?
When you were in the lowest parts of your journey, what kept you going and why did you stick to it?
There was a point after getting rejected, I think November 2015, I can't remember, whatever my set of my timeline was, I seriously wanted to quit writing books. I was doing really well as a journalist and I thought, okay, I'll just stick with that. I'll just stick in that lane. And my friend who also told me, you know, the feedback of like, take some time off and then come back. She's like, don't quit. You're so close. The fact that agents gave you feedback means that there's something there that they like. So don't quit. And she told me to take some time off and I'm glad she did, because I think if I had hopped on the query train then, I would have also gotten rejected and miserable and sad. And I took a year and a half to revise that manuscript. And I'm glad. I think I had in my head that like I needed to do it fast. I needed to get an agent fast. I needed to sell a book fast. And in the process of that, I got rejected because it wasn't, the book wasn't ready. My query letter was great, but my manuscript wasn't ready. So I think there was definitely a time where I wanted to quit because I felt like I had in my mind, I was like, well, if I just find another agent, I'll sell another book and then, I'll, you know, I don't have to go through this. But I realized that I needed to actually write a better book than try to find an agent. So that's what I did instead.
Nice. Do you feel like you made any mistakes along the way that you might want to, you know, let listeners know so maybe they can avoid making those same mistakes?
I definitely, like I said, it took me 3 years and my first draft of that pretty ugly book was a total pantser situation. I know some people who write like that. I don't write like that anymore because for me, it's so time consuming and so much revising. I don't know how many drafts I had of that book before an agent signed me. So I would say that it didn't work for me. And if things aren't working for you, trying something new, something different, something that's not the same. Because I pantsed all my other books before Artifacts. It was all just, I'm going to sit down and write now. And Artifacts I wrote in 3 months. And my agent, when she read it, said to me, this is the most structured book I've read from you. And I was like, I know, because I really worked at it. And but I also wrote it faster. And I think my biggest mistake was just sitting down and la, 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 I'm going to write. Or something I'll say about revising is that I used to revise by chapter. And I would be like, okay, let me find the typos and let me change these characters. And I would try to fix everything under the sun. Mm. And something I learned in a class I took with Holly Lyle called How to Revise Your Novel was do passes on, like do a copy edit pass and do not fix anything else. And do a pass on just characters and don't fix anything else. And that really taught me to, because I was trying to fix everything. Yeah. And in doing so, I fixed nothing. So.
Yeah, I do the same thing where I do very focused passes, mainly because I'll get distracted. It's just like everyday life. Like, you know, if I'm cooking dinner and then I decide I need to wipe down a cabinet and then I'll be burning dinner because I got distracted by wiping down the cabinet, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
Can you share with listeners one of the most important lessons that you learned on your journey to publication?
I would say, you know, my friends who got published before me all said to me, and it really helped because, you know, I was so focused on my pub date, you know, November 14th. And one of my friends who pubbed February 20 said to me, your book doesn't end on November 14th. Like, it's just the beginning. And it doesn't need to sell a million copies on the first day. People will find it and it'll keep growing and it'll keep having a life. And that really helped me because I realized I think I was so shooting forward on that date that I forgot that like people don't always read everything as soon as it comes out, or, you know, they might discover it later, or they, you know, a friend passes it on. He really helped me keep perspective on the pub date is just one date, that there's a long life for my book beyond the publishing date.
Yeah, that is great advice, because I do feel like a lot of writers will get discouraged by the time their book has come out, because they feel like they haven't sold enough copies or got enough attention on it. But yeah, a lot of books have a lot longer tail than we like to think about.
Yes.
All right. I call this the acknowledgements portion of the podcast. Mm-hmm. This is not a business that most of us succeed in on our own. So yes. Who are some of the people who helped you along the way and how?
My friend Melissa Sarno, she's a middle grade writer. She was the one who, we both had the same agent, or my first agent, and we both got let go when my agent left agenting. So she became my query buddy in the trenches. My current agent, Katie Flum, is amazing. And anytime I have a question, anytime I'm struggling with writing, she has fantastic notes. I really wanted an editorial agent. I think she's one of the few people who praises me, but also like really picks at stuff that I'm like, yeah, I did that wrong. You're right. Things like that. And then lastly, my husband, he's a TV comedy writer. And so a lot of the rom-com, I would brainstorm with him and ask him, like, how do I make this funnier? And so he would pitch me some ideas and we'd go back and forth. There's a section in my YA romance where that one of the romantic interests, he shares all of his dates. And so we just sat down and made a list together of like, what is the worst date you've ever been on or had happened to you? And so I took that and worked it into the book.
Nice. Before you go, since we haven't heard about it yet, because your query was for a different book, do you want to tell us about Artifacts of an Ex?
Sure. So Artifacts was inspired by an art exhibit I saw in Los Angeles called The Museum of Broken Relationships. It was about breakup objects from people's friendships, relationships, and I was fascinated by it. And I thought it'd be really cool if a teen took that idea after she gets broken up with and turns it into a teen exhibit. And so that's the inspiration for Artifacts. She does that. Her boyfriend breaks up with her. She starts an art exhibit, meets another creative kid who she falls for, but he is convinced, Daniel's convinced he's the rebound guy. So he's like, you just broke up with your boyfriend. That's all I do is go out with people who want to get back together with their ex. So I'm not going out with you, but we can hang out. And of course, they fall in love.
Nice. All right. Thank you, Jennifer, so much for coming on the show and sharing your story with everyone.
Yes, thank you.
Great. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Queries, Qualms, and Quirks. You can find the text of Jennifer's query in the show notes, along with links to find out more about her and her books. If you enjoyed the show, I'd appreciate if you'd help me find new listeners by leaving a review, telling your friends, or sharing this episode on social media. If you're interested in supporting the show, go to patreon.com/Sarah Nicholas. That is Sarah with an H and Nicholas with no H. And if you're a published author interested in being a guest on the show, please click on the home base link in the description or go to sarahnicholas.com and click on the podcast logo in the sidebar. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.